Welcome to the Credit Valores Market Update Call. My name is Hilda, and I will be your operator for today. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the call over to Mr. David Sanchez. You may begin.
Thank you for joining us this morning. I'm David Sanchez, founder and CEO of Credit Valores, and here with me is Patricia Moreno, Head of International Funding and Investor Relations, and Juan Camilo Mesa, our newly appointed Chief Risk Officer. On the line, we also have representatives from our shareholders joining us from different cities, Gustavo Ferraro and Javier Ledesma from Gramercy, and Alberto Hernández from Aecon. In the last couple of days, we have witnessed with surprise a strong drop in the price of our 144A Reg S bond, and we have answered several of your calls and emails trying to address your concerns regarding the possible reason behind this price action. Let me first say that we do not believe that the current price levels of the bond reflect the credit quality of Credit Valores or the financing cost of the company. Since our third quarter results conference call last week, we have made no additional announcements in the domestic or international market, and no material event has occurred. The fundamentals of the company remain in line with our announcements last week, and we have not had any material change in our operation or in the regulatory framework for our business in Colombia. Credit Valores continues to be the leading non-bank financial institutions in Colombia with over 15 years of experience with a proven business model with more than $2.4 billion in new loans issued. Year over year, payroll loans originations are growing at a healthy 31% versus total market that shows a growth rate of 9%. Our credit card portfolio is growing at a 24% versus 3.7% from the market. The company is well positioned, fully funded, and with a consolidated distribution platform that would allow us to capture favorable market conditions in coming years. Our shareholders, Gramercy, Aecon, and Credit Holding, strongly support the company's financial stability and growth perspectives for the following years, and none of them is currently engaged in any transactions to sell any or all of their stakes of the company. We acknowledge that our bond falls into an asset class that has been hit in the last month because of general negative market sentiment. High-yield emerging market bonds are usually the first asset affected in the market with several sources of uncertainty and risk aversion. In particular, the prices of the bonds of non-banking financial institutions of the region, which are mainly concentrated in Mexico, were affected by announcements from the New Mexican government regarding potential regulation for control interest rates and commissions and the need for transparency rules for loan origination. Let us just clarify that we only operate in Colombia in a competitive business environment with strong regulatory framework. We have a national law regulating certain aspects of payroll loans. The existence of this law and the fact that the payroll loan market is a mature and stable financial market, which represents 36% of total consumer loans in the country, contributes to have a more sustainable business model in Colombia as compared to other LATAM countries. The payroll loan law aims to protect both borrowers and lenders. From the lender perspective, the law allows the deduction of the credit payments directly from borrower's paycheck and transfer payments to a lender. In addition, if the borrower changes job, the new employer is responsible for applying deductions and make payments. From the borrower perspective, the law establishes maximum interest rate and maximum deductions amount as a percentage of salaries. In terms of business operation, borrowers in Colombia can freely select the lender of their choice for a payroll loan, while in Mexico and Brazil, typically you need a distributor or contact through unions. Regarding our debt maturity profile, between 2017 and 2018, we focus on extending the average life of our debt through several transactions. We managed to extend the average life of our debt from 1.1 years in June 2017 to 3.2 years as of September of 2018. This result is also in line with the average life of our loan portfolio, which is about 3.8 years. Next year, our debt profile includes amortization of only $32 million for secure and secure credit facilities with local financial institutions, which are only amortizations from revolving facilities with an availability period of up to 36 months. We also maintain access to several funding and liquidity sources, allowing us to have committed and uncommitted credit facilities with local financial institutions and cash on hand for about $220 million, out of which $90 million are lines available to use in the following 18 months. On November 5, 2018, we renovated a local security syndicated loan to fund payroll loan origination with four local financial institutions for an amount of 223 billion Colombian pesos, about $71 million. The loan has a three-year availability period for revolving disbursement and 5.5 years tenure. We will closely monitor the performance of the bond. It is of our interest that the price of the bond truly reflects the company's financial situation and the performance of the asset class, avoiding sudden and explainable movements. We will open now the line for a Q&A.
Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone. If you'd like to cancel your request, please press the pound sign or the hash key. And if you are using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star and then 1 on your touchtone phone. We have a question from Alvin Chu from Trent Capital.
Hi, David. Thank you for hosting this call. I've really like two questions. First question is, the company has mentioned that it is trying to get a syndicated loan from an international syndicate of lenders and investors. Now that talk has been ongoing for quite some time. Where are you exactly in that process? Is negotiation over the pricing, which I think is going to be made more difficult by the recent price action in the bond market, or it's over some other terms or conditions in the credit negotiations? Perhaps, you know, some details that would be helpful. And then my second question is on equity contribution from existing shareholders. Given that you are looking to actually expand a loan book in the new year, 2019, are the shareholders willing to put up the additional capital into the company to actually fund this growth? Thank you.
For the first question, hi Alvin, this is Patricia.
Hi.
Yes, it has been a process that has been taking longer than expected. But it's not because the negotiation has been difficult. It's more that we have market conditions have not helped, definitely, in the last month. We are right now talking still to investors in terms of defining final pricing. General conditions for the loan are already agreed on, and it's just a matter of the company agreeing on pricing conditions.
Mm-hmm. I think it's worth to mention that this facility it's a bit complex facility because probably will include two different type of currencies, and it's something that we do not need the resources right now. It's basically getting the pre-funding for complete 2019. So we're not in a rush, and it's something that it's our concern. Probably it's going to happen soon. We're not sure when, but we will be closing when market conditions reflect the appropriate pricing of that facility. We do not consider that the current bond prices reflect the appropriate cost of funding for our company. As I mentioned in the introduction, we closed a facility of close to $71 million with local financial institutions, and that rate is close to probably 11% in Colombian pesos. That's what we consider the right price for local facilities that can compensate, let's say, facilities from international markets. The second question, about equity contributions, I think we're going to manage growth according to our ability to generate profits and increase equity into the company. We have had no discussions with shareholders right now about new equity contributions. As you are aware, last year we received a $20 million equity contribution from one of our shareholders. What I can guarantee is that if we require new equity contributions, we will look for current shareholders, or we will look for a more efficient way to manage our equity.
All right, thank you.
The next question comes from Juan Pardo from Suda Asset Management.
Good morning, and thank you for hosting this call. We really appreciate that. My question was regarding the asset quality and your perspective on how it's going to perform over the next few quarters. On a regular basis, quarterly, you present the payroll book diversification, and it's really well diversified. It would be very nice to know how does it look, the whole book, including the credit card book, given the fact that Bucaramanga and Villavicencio recently presented several problems over there. So just to know how does it look, the whole book. That's my first question. And the second one has to do with the collection agreements that you guys have with the utility companies. If you have any concerns or see any red flags with other utility companies that might impact the non-performing loans, as we have seen, Bucaramanga is struggling a little bit, and we also had some evidence with the alliance with Tigo. So in order to see if is there any other issues going on with the other alliances that you have signed. Thank you.
Okay. So regarding the asset quality, basically the large percentage of our portfolio, around 50, a bit higher than 55%, it's comprised of payroll loans. Payroll loans still are the lowest, probably, or the highest quality of loan you can find in consumer lending market. Our portfolio of consumer loans stands around 85% in public employees and pensioners. Those represent even the highest quality, because pensioners or public employees tend to be, for pensioners, they never lose the pension, and the only condition to lose the pension is when someone dies, and the 100% of the portfolio has a life insurance. Yes, we had a spiking in NPLs in the credit card business, focused on two different alliances. One, it's IMB, which is in the Bucaramanga region, and the other one, it's in EMSA, which is the Villavicencio region. The Villavicencio region, we are suffering from the impact of less investment and less development due to restrictions in investments in the oil and gas sector. This region had a high dependency on oil and gas, and due to a decrease in prices in the last 2 years, we're seeing a spike in unemployment. Unemployment reflects negatively impacts the payment habits. It's something that is under control. It's something that we basically adjusted underwriting policies, and we feel it tends to stabilize, even though it's not tend to get a much better performance, but at least tend to be a much more stable. In the Bucaramanga region, it's more of an operational issue. IMBA, it's an alliance that we developed quite some time already, but they had an operational issue which, due to an insurance matter not related to our company, the alliance or the invoicing, the invoices the scheme they use to send invoices start not working well, we decided to basically reduce the issue of new loans in that region, as well in Bucaramanga, we're seeing an impact due to an economic scenario that it's a bit difficult to manage due to immigration of Venezuelans in the region, that it's creating a very complex economic scenario. Besides those two alliances, the other alliances are working well. The NPL levels are under control, and we don't see any red flags in these alliances.
The collection agreement with utility companies.
Okay, so I think I answered both questions.
I would like to follow up on your answer. If we take a look to the whole loan book, taking into account both payable and credit card business, how diversified it is geographically, because as far as I understand, Bucaramanga in the credit card business weighs a lot. So I would like to know how diversified is the loan book on a consolidated basis, and also if you have any perspective in the long term on how the loan book is going to grow, not precisely compared to the industry, but if you have a goal in mind, a percentage goal or a size in pesos terms, that would be great. Thank you.
Regarding the impact of the Bucaramanga alliances, Bucaramanga it's the smallest alliance that we currently have. It's the smallest portfolio, so I think it will not have or will not create a large impact in the growth rate of the portfolio. I think we're going to be able to. I think. Due to new policy and procedures and to new underwriting policies that have been implemented by our new chief risk officer, we're seeing probably a lower growth rate with a higher asset quality. That's something that we're putting in place. Even though still we're growing fast, we're growing in regions where credit facilities are not available. We have very limited presence from large financial institutions, so the market is there. We're seeing, even though that we have an important restriction in terms of asset quality, we're seeing a large growth rate.
Okay, thanks so much.
The next question comes from Thiago Parente from Fidelity.
Hi, David, Patricia, thanks for organizing the call. I just wanted to go back on the issue of capitalization of the company. I think you mentioned on the earnings call that you're looking into ways of strengthening that capitalization, and that you maintain the objective of a rating upgrade eventually by Standard & Poor's, whereas you're currently on negative outlook. So could I just ask you a bit to flesh out maybe a bit more your plans to strengthen the capitalization of the company in light of what you've just said, that you do not see the need for any equity contributions at this stage. Then the second question would be, again, on asset quality. The message is that the issues with the credit card portfolio are under control, but could you comment on the sort of near-term outlook for the asset quality indicators going into the Q4 results and early 2019? Are we likely to see still a bit of deterioration, or are you comfortable that we've seen the worst by now?
Okay.
On the first question, hi Tiago, this is Patricia. On the first question, we are with Standard & Poor's specifically, what we have been doing is talking since, actually prior to the publication of the report in September, to understand exactly this risk-adjusted capital ratio, which is the reason they decided to change the outlook from stable to negative. This ratio is specifically affected by two things during this year. The first one was the adoption of IFRS 9, which we disclosed in our financial statements as of March of this year. We took a hit in our shareholders' equity of about $17 million because of the adoption of this standard, which is not a standard that the financial institutions had adopted yet on an individual basis in Colombia. It's a little bit more strict than what we have with the reference model from the financial superintendent. So this is a one-time effect in our shareholders' equity, and of course it will remain going forward. The second impact in our shareholders' equity this year, or affecting the risk-adjusted capital ratio from Standard & Poor's, is an investment that we have in Asticredito. Asticredito is a company that manages the sales force of Credivalores on an exclusive basis, based on our underwriting policies and our training policies. And in this company, we have a stake of 9.22% since September of 2017. According to the methodology from Standard & Poor's, they consider this an account that they take out of the shareholder's equity, even if it is 10%, if it's less than 10% of the shares of the company, but they still consider this participation strategic, so that's why they punish a little bit more the ratio. With these two effects, this year, of course, the threshold that Standard & Poor's usually considers healthy for a B-plus rating for this risk-adjusted capital ratio went a little bit below that threshold. And what we are doing are three announcements that we publicly made in the conference call last week. One thing is to do a complete divestment from Asticredito before this year ends. We are already approved by the board of directors of Asticredito, Credivalores, and the company that is going to buy the stake. We just define also the price at which that sale is going to be completed. And this is something that we will reveal in our full year 2018 conference call. But this is a commitment from the company to do this year so that the shareholders' equity will not result affected under these methodologies from the Standard & Poor's. The second thing that we're doing, and that has been also part of the volatility in the shareholders' equity this year, is the impact of the evaluation of the derivative instruments that we have in place to hedge specifically this bond, the 144A bond. We have cross-currency swaps, we have call spreads, and the interest rate component of the evaluation of these derivatives, since we adopted hedge accounting, is taking a hit on the OCI account, on the other comprehensive income account under the shareholders' equity. What we will have until maturity of these derivatives is constant volatility, gains and losses, given the evaluation of this instrument. This is a reality for Credivalores and for any other issuers that adopt hedge accounting for these instruments. We are exploring with our auditors alternatives to limit this volatility in the shareholders' equity. However, it will depend, of course, on their assessment. This is something that we will try to implement by year-end, but it's out of our control.
You mentioned three matters, three actions. So what's the third one?
And the third one was a recent capitalization from one of our shareholders of almost $1 million that was revealed as of September of this mm-hmm. year. This information that is already public. No? The evaluation of the derivative instruments in the OCI account does not have any cash impact on for the company. Of course, this is merely an accrual impact.
I think it's important to mention, Thiago, that the adoption of IFRS and the evaluation of the derivative, none of them has any cash impact into the, in the company. Basically, it's just valuation methodology in the derivative, and in the IFRS adoption, it's something, it's higher provisions. Probably it's even better for the company, have a higher provision levels for the coming years. It's something that we're looking at, and it's, yes, it became a restriction for growth in the coming years, and it's something that we're discussing, and we will be discussing with shareholders with year-end results.
And regarding your second question on asset quality, I guess it's a good opportunity to present Juan Camilo Mesa, our new Chief Risk Officer.
Hi, this is Juan. I have, let me talk briefly, of 10 years of experience in consumer finance, mainly in risk management and finance. I have a business degree, did a postgraduate study in economics, and a Master of Science in Risk Management. Regarding the question of the asset quality, our short-term outlook is stable. The issues that affected the NPL have been identified and corrected, which should lead to a gradual improvement of these ratios. We are currently in Colombia, the macroeconomic variables are not as good as we hoped, and this is one of the main reasons that have affected the NPL. But we are confident that during the next year we should see an improvement.
Mm-hmm. And for Q4?
For Q4, what
For Q4 on this year, the ratios should remain stable.
Okay. So just one quick follow-up. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but on the earnings call, on the capitalization of the company, it was mentioned that you could look into possibly issuing a hybrid security, like some of the Mexican your Mexican peers have done. Could just expand a bit more on you know your thinking on that front, please.
I mean, we only mentioned this as one of the alternatives that is being discussed by the board of directors, by the administration, and that will be presented to shareholders. But it's not like we are ahead in this analysis. It's one of the alternatives that other non-banking financial institutions in the region have also used in the past. So of course, right now there are no market conditions for a transaction like this, but 2019 hasn't started yet, so we'll see how it goes by, and we'll let you know about the details if we consider this transaction appropriate and convenient for the company.
Thiago, I think I want to mention that for our 2019 plan, we can manage the growth rate, the expected growth rate, with the current level of equity in the company. For, let's say, if you look at a longer-term horizon, it's something that we need to discuss, but for, let's say, short-term 2019 and 2020, we feel that with profits generated by the company, the net income next year looks very healthy, and we feel that we're going to have enough equity to accomplish our business plan for 2019 and 2020.
Thank you.
We have a question from Adrian Garcia from Invesco.
Hi, thank you very much for having this call. My question revolves around a follow-up on the credit quality. You have pointed out in the call, in the earnings call and earlier today, that you isolate the issues of NPL deterioration mainly to two regions, Bucaramanga and Villavicencio. But at the same time, Juan Camilo just mentioned that it is also related to the negative macro outlook of the country. So how much comfort can you give us that the asset quality deterioration has really been isolated to these two regions as opposed to being a more macro story affecting the entire country? That's one question. And the other question is related as a follow-up on the disposal or asset sale of Alticredito. What impact will it have on a capitalization basis once this is fully divested?
Hi, Adrian. In terms of asset quality, these two regions have, compared to the rest of the country, have a high credit risk currently. So it is isolated to those two regions. This credit risk that is above anything that we're seeing in the country. In the rest of the country, due to the macroeconomic conditions, there's some deterioration on the credit risk, but that's easily manageable with new origination policies that are currently in place and by managing the portfolio, especially in credit card, that's where we are seeing most of this deterioration. We are confident with the new tools that we have in place, we can have a stronger outlook for 2019.
So could you maybe point out what is that tool that will make the asset quality better? What is there? Could you shed some light as to how is this going to benefit?
Yeah, basically what we're doing is we are putting a lot of resources in analytic and technology, trying to be more cost efficient in all our process, and with analytics have a better risk segmentation of our portfolio. Especially in our credit card portfolio, assessing the risk after the origination is really important. So the models that we are developing will help us know on which clients we need to increase our exposure and which clients we have to decrease our exposure or even close the credit card.
Okay.
And on the question of what impact will have the divestment from Alticredito in our capitalization is basically the impact that it will have on the risk-adjusted capital ratio that is the measure from Standard & Poor's. So since today they are discounting these investments out of our shareholders' equity, once we complete the divestment from Alticredito, which stands about at $9 million today in our books, that's the same amount that will be added back to our shareholders' equity, improving, of course, the ratio. So that's like the first impact that you'll see. It will still remain among the assets that we have, not as an investment, but as an account receivable for a while once we complete the payment from the entity that is going to buy the stake.
All right. Thank you.
The next question comes from Jamie Nicholson from Credit Suisse.
Hi, thanks so much for the call. I have two questions. The first one relates to your covenant compliance, and you mentioned on your earnings call that you were in compliance according to the description of notes, but I'm just wondering if you feel you're at any risk in any of your loan agreements of breaching a covenant this coming quarter, and if so, what are you doing to manage that? That's my first question.
We regarding the covenants in each of the contracts will be comply by next quarter. Basically, we have two covenants that we have to take care of. One is the capitalization ratio, and the one that it's unencumbered asset over unsecured debt, that it's by the 144, by the bond issuance. Both covenants are under, como se dice, cumpliendo.
No, we will meet the covenants.
Yes.
For the description of the notes.
For the description of the notes, yes.
And for the rest of the loan facilities, local and international facilities that we have, basically most of the, all of the covenants are met. We only see, with a special attention, of course, the equity to assets ratio, which is reaching a point a little bit below 12%, which is one of the covenants that we've had, for example, with the IFC. We have requested already a waiver, and we got a positive answer from the IFC to have a waiver of this covenant up to March of next year. That gives us time, enough time, of course, to first consider a new alternative for capitalization of the company, which we have discussed already during the call, and second, also to probably open the discussion with the IFC, of course, with whom we have had a relationship since 2009. It's a relationship that goes beyond a financial sponsor, more of a partnership also for a bancarization and a business in which we are also accessing vulnerable population in Colombia. So what we will try to open with them is a discussion about the way we calculate this covenant, because our assets have been impacted in the last year, especially because we have increased the amount of cash we have right now. Our liquidity position has increased considerably, and after the issuance of the bond, basically because we changed our financing structure. We went from this freestanding trust that managed our cash, to be honest, because all the collections were tied to this freestanding trust and the payments to the debt. But since the issuance of the bond and the prepayment of all these freestanding trusts, we have a larger amount of cash that we maintain in our treasury, invested also in several alternatives, but this has increased compared to last year. And also, we are having a temporary impact of the valuation of the derivative instruments, as we mentioned, not only in the shareholders' equity, which is we already explained, but also in the asset side because of the net deferred taxes that are originated because we have losses and gains during the period, which we have to account for the income tax. So those are the things that we have been discussing with the IFC. They are aware of this movement. There were discussions about a possible change in the definition of this covenant. However, we will have to see, but we still have a long way to go until March, until the covenant and it's applicable. As of the rest of covenants that we have today outstanding under any other credit facility, they are all met, and we are foreseeing that for the year end we are also going to meet all of them.
Great, thanks. And my second question relates to portfolio sales. You mentioned how 2008 has been a transitional year as you're moving away from portfolio sales to just be generating interest income from your portfolio. But I'm wondering how long you expect that transitional period, and if you do need to boost profitability, if you would be considering any portfolio sales to do that. Thanks.
Could you repeat the question, please, Jamie?
It relates to portfolio sales and how you mentioned that in 2008 it's been a transitional year as you're moving away from generating revenues from portfolio sales to just generating revenues from interest income. So I'm just wondering if you needed to boost profitability at all, or if you would be considering additional portfolio sales, or if you're continuing to wind that down, and what's your expectation for the transition period into 2019?
No, we're not considering any portfolio sales. Basically, it's a structure, it's a funding structure that it's not in use anymore by the company. Basically, we have to grow our recurrent interest in. That's the explanation, yeah.
Okay, thanks. Thanks again for the call.
The next question comes from Felipe Esquitia from Allianz.
Hi. Thank you very much for the call. It's just I was wondering about the decrease in the price bonds. Maybe I missed some part of the introduction. So do you think that is something about just market movement, or do you have so many reasons about it? Thank you.
Yeah, well, sure. We are as surprised as the rest of investors are, and that's why we organized this call today. We have several information regard, like rumors all over the place, that we really cannot explain why the bond went to the price that you see, that you saw in the screen at the end of yesterday, and even this morning, we are starting to see the bond performing better during the day, and that this is why we are hosting this call. We have explained that no material announcements have been made by the company in the domestic and international market after our third quarter results conference call last week. There have been no changes in the regulatory framework for our business in Colombia, and we consider that the current prices of the bond that do not reflect at all the credit quality of Credit Valores or our financing costs in general. And this was like the introduction of the conference. Actually, we have no additional information regarding why the movement in the price so sharp, especially during Tuesday.
Perfect. Thank you.
The next question comes from Mariana Villalba from NN Investment Partners.
30 plus. Hi, Patricia, David, thank you for the call. My first question is on NPLs of credit cards. They rose really sharply in the last 12 months and went going to 10% from 5%. Do you have a sense of at what level of NPLs and credit cards you would feel comfortable with? And also along the lines of asset quality and the initiatives that you are taking now, could you please provide us more details about your new underwriting policies and what is changing in the process of credit analysis to make sure that asset quality does not continue to deteriorate? And the third question is, do you think it's possible to continue to grow at a rate of 20% or more in that product without generating more asset quality deterioration?
Hi. In terms of asset quality of the credit card business, it's especially in the portfolio that we have here, it's a very profitable portfolio. The NPL that can be sustained, it can be even upwards of the current NPL of the company due to the interest rate that is the maximum allowed and the fees.
It stands at about 45% as of September.
So I'm not worried about the current NPL, and I think that even a higher one could be sustained by the product. However, due to the current conditions in the country, as we mentioned, we've changed some of our underwriting policies. These changes have been a reaction to the increase of the credit risk. The credit segments that had a behavior in the past have increased the credit risk currently. So our underwriting policies, what I've tried to do is decrease the new credit risk that we are allowing and trying to control the portfolio that we currently have.
Ms. Villalba, does that answer your question?
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Our next question comes from Sergio Delgado from Aventicum Capital.
Yes, hi. Thank you, Patricia. Thank you, David, for the call. I have three questions. Could you please comment what will be the pro forma effect on the on encumbered assets on secured debt ratio pro forma for this international syndicated loan that you're negotiating? That's the first one. The second, if we go to your accounts receivable, we see a substantial increase year-to-date on Patrimonios Autónomos. So if you could comment on that. And then the final question would be as to what, given that your funding costs have increased substantially, if you could mention some measures that you are planning to undertake to improve the net interest margin and also improve your efficiency ratios. Thank you.
On the performance of the unencumbered assets and secured debt ratio and covenant under the description of the note, because I mean, it will not be affected by the facility that we are looking into closing before year end, as this will affect the denominator of the ratio, but also the numerator. It will be cash, so it's a transparent effect.
So it's going to be also an unsecured loan. Sorry.
It's an unsecured loan. Yeah. The whole time we have been talking about a senior unsecured loan.
Okay. Thank you.
Second, we are not, since the announcement that we did last week on what we have already disbursed under the secure loan facility that we have with the local financial institutions, we have not made any additional disbursement during the months of October, November, and December of this year. So this ratio will not change dramatically compared to what the result was as of September. Of course, it was 113.4, so we'll be around those levels by the year end. In terms of the account receivable, I send you the detail of the account receivable, especially for the debtor's account that we have under the account receivable. The way this account receivable works under the utilities agreement is that, especially for credit cards, the collections are done through the utility bill of the utilities, through the utility bill, and also affected by the cycle of the utilities, the billing cycle of the utilities, which differs from our billing cycle. So that's why we do two things. We adjust our NPLs for this product and for the whole portfolio, because after 31 days, it's not like the installment of the credit card is not payable, it's not paid by our client, but it could be that the billing cycle of the utility has not been completed, so that our client has not received yet the bill with the installment from our credit card and has not been able to pay. That's why we adjusted for 60 days. The second thing is that during those 60 days, the utility might have collected the amount from the installment from our client, and this amount goes to a freestanding trust, but it has not been that once we have like a quarterly end, the amount has not been passed on as cash to Credit Valores, so it remains as an account payable by the freestanding trust to Credit Valores, and that's why it's in account receivable from Credit Valores. So that's like the first effect from the utility cycle, the utility billing cycle that we use as a collection channel for our credit card. The second thing is that during this year, during the first half of this year, we did use the secure loan facility that we have with local financial institutions for the payroll origination. And of course, this means that we had a larger amount of assets at freestanding trust, payroll loans. And at the end of each quarter in March, June, and September, what you are seeing there is the reflection of the accounts receivable from the freestanding trust that we reflect in our financial statements. And on the third question about the funding cost.
So sorry, should we see a diminution, a decrease in this account, in the accounts receivable, or not?
No.
Going forward.
They should remain stable, especially within this account that is reflecting the movement in the freestanding trust. The only thing that I foresee that will cause an increase in accounts receivable is the divestment from Asicredito that I just mentioned. It's going to be completed before year end, and immediately it will become an account receivable until we are getting paid by the company that is buying this stake. So that's like the only search that I see for an important increase in accounts receivable by year end. Okay, and in terms of funding costs, yes, of course, we issued a bond last year with a 9.75% coupon, of course, and we had to hedge it to pesos. However, the hedge to pesos, we considered it to be very effective and very competitive in terms of the cost of funding. We ended up hedging the bond with all the structures to a rate in pesos equal to IBR plus 8.57%. And this allowed us not only to be completely in pesos today, completely hedged, which is an effect that you have seen in our P&L for June, for March, June, and September of this year, but also we are in a floating rate, which is very positive for our interest rate gap. Our asset is also in floating rate, DTF, but DTF and IBR have a 95% correlation as floating rates in Colombia, so we believe that this will allow, and the bond represents today about 64% of our indebtedness. So currently we feel that the gap there is being taken care of. And of course the rest, what we did during the first half of the year about disbursing the secure loan facility for payroll loans allowed us to have a better cost of funding in terms of the mix between dollars and pesos. Letting us to have a 12.7% cost of funding as of September of this year, which, as you see, if you have the presentation with you or if you saw it, is actually even below what we had as of December of last year, and which was 14%, and even below the 13.4% that we have as of 2016. So through these derivative instruments that we still have outstanding, and the flexibility to, in the future, fix any part of the amount that we have outstanding under this cross-currency swap, we feel that we have enough room to optimize the cost of funding of the company. In terms of tenor, of course, our cost of funding increased also because we increased the average size of the debt. We went from 1.1 years to 3.8 years at the beginning of the end of 2017, and today, well, it's been already 9 months. We are at 3.2 years in the average life of our debt. But this of course has a cost. Extending the average and reducing the refinancing risk, of course, has a cost, which we're willing to take for the flexibility that we can have today in our debt profile.
And to complement what Patricia mentioned, I think that's what one of the strengths that we have for the future, for the coming years. We're fully funded. We have no gap in terms of tenure of the debt, and we have no gap in interest rates. When you compare this structure to other non-bank financial institutions, it's something that's very strong, and it's being recognized by the rating agencies and the local financial institutions that continually support our operation by lending to Credit Valores. I think being able to have like the 3.8 years and no gap in interest rates and no gap in term, it's very important for us.
Thank you. The next question comes from Nick Dimitrov from Morgan Stanley.
Thank you. Yeah, I just want to get some clarification on two things. And the first one is going to be one of the hot topics, capital. So if you can help us a little bit, you know, I'm looking at your solvency ratio, equity to assets, right? And, you know, I've been kind of following your company for a year and a half, and the solvency ratio has been kind of in a decline for that period. It's down to 12%. You say that you feel comfortable with the current capitalization. Maybe you can kind of, you can give us an idea in terms of how you want to manage it going forward, considering the fact that, you know, you still have the ambition to grow the book by 20 to 30%. I don't see the organic capital generation being there to support such growth. It's a little bit hard for me to see how that capitalization is going to stabilize at this level or even improve, right? So if you can kind of give us some color on how you want to manage capital in that regard, and like the ratio that you're targeting, right? Solvency 12% currently, and then if you look at leverage, it's gone up to almost 7 times. So that's going to be my first question. Thank you.
See, that solvency ratio at 12%, it's something that we are monitoring. As Patricia mentioned earlier in the call, it was negatively impacted by the evaluation of the derivative. And it's something that we're looking at, like, through accounting methods, how we can manage this methodology, since it's a methodology that is costing in equity, but it doesn't have any cash impact in the company. It's just an accounting result of how we value that derivative. And that has a huge impact, as of our call of September, the impact in derivative was close to 37 billion Colombian pesos. So it's something that we're monitoring. Besides that, we're trying to improve. As we improve net income is going to help us increase equity, and that will help us increase the solvency ratio in order to continue growing.
So long term, how do you want to manage that ratio? In other words, are we comfortable? Do you want to see it go back up to 14%, 15%? How do you want to manage it going forward?
No, I think it's going to be between 12 and 13%. That's where we want to keep it. Probably a little bit higher of 12%, so not to be too close to our covenant. But around 12.5% and 13%.
Okay. That doesn't strike me as very strong for a non-bank financial institution. And then on the asset quality front, I just want to make sure that I understood it correctly. So it does seem like NPLs will for Q4, right? It's already December, so you should have a fairly decent kind of look through in terms of where NPLs are going to be. But from what I understood, NPLs are going to be more or less unchanged. Did I understand correctly?
That's what we're expecting, yes, to have very similar NPL levels for as of December.
Okay, so that is kind of a fair assumption then that asset quality deterioration due to the reasons that you pointed out earlier has already peaked. So if it stabilizes at the current level, right, in Q4, we should probably see some improvement in the beginning of 2019.
Yeah, I think it's going to be stable as of Q4, and we're foreseeing improvements in the first quarter and second quarter of 2019. I think with new underwriting policies, new software, new investment in analytics, that's going to change the dynamics of our recovery percentages and the type of loans that we're issuing. And that's I do feel confident that the new measurements and the new, let's say, investment that we're making for the last couple of months are going to have some results for Q1 2019.
Okay. Okay, got it. Thank you. Just one request, if you don't mind. Can I ask you, in your quarterly presentation, to break out the numbers on a quarterly basis rather than on a cumulative basis, like year-to-date numbers? Because we obviously follow the company. We want to see how the company is doing on a quarterly basis. It's just easier for us to kind of, you know, figure out what's going on if the numbers are broken down. Otherwise, we have to do the work ourselves. That's a very easy fix.
Yes, we do present the quarterly results for the P&L. As you see there, it's second quarter versus third quarter. And then the accumulated 9 months. But I don't know if you need like...
Maybe I was looking at the wrong... Okay, I'll reach out to you separately on
okay, yeah, sure.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, I think we can close the conference right now, operator.
Thank you. With this, I would like to... do you have any final remarks?
I think, like, as I started the call, I said we do not understand and we don't have any additional information that basically justify the current level of our bond. We continuously keep finding funding sources in Colombia at lower cost. We do not need additional funding for 2019. Basically, we're fully funded. We don't have large dues on 2019 amortizations. Basically, are just revolving facilities that are committed facilities. So we feel that we're fully funded. The business model is working well. We have the issue for NPLs that we feel that are under control. At least we have a very good understanding what's causing these NPLs, and we don't have any other information that can justify the current bond, the current price level of the bond. That's my just to close the conversation.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference. We thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.